True wealth isn't just what you earn. It's the life you live and the legacy you leave. Welcome to Money Sense, where we've spent over 30 years helping people plan for their finances, their health, and the story they want to tell. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder of the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And today I have my guest, Tanami Neiman, and she is a financial advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. And we just happened to be having a conversation with one of our clients talking about real estate and some of the really big decisions that have to be made. And one of the things that I always say to clients is, well, you can't eat your house.
Yeah, I like that. It's so true.
And today what we want to talk about are some of those options that you have to help you to think about if you're really looking at retirement. And, you know, we don't want to look at retirement, you know, a month before you retire. We really want to look at retirement well in advance of that to just get a feel for what are you thinking? What do you want? And, you know, the big thing is what Tammy's going to do today is she's going to be really able to give you some of those options to think about. And we always want to say each person is different. Each situation is different. And I always kind of look at it, well, where do you want in the end that house? Do you want it to pass to your kids? Well, that's a great legacy.
Right.
But if it's not about that, maybe you just want to either rent or maybe you want to put a smaller down payment down or do something different. So as I said, my guest today is Tanami Neiman. And Tanami, welcome to Money Sense.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It sounds so funny to say that to you because I pass you in the hallway all the time. But really, welcome to Money Sense.
By way of introduction, a little bit about me is the expertise that I bring to the firm is really my real estate background. For 25 years, I did residential lending. I was in lending back in the late 90s when interest rates, I remember sitting at my desk and everybody jumping up and yelling, yay, interest rates are finally single digits. We were so excited because we haven't seen that in a long time. So I've weathered through that. I weathered through 2008 with the real estate. I owned my own mortgage banker firm for many, many years. So real estate's in my blood. I say it's my first love. I really love what I do here. And you know what? Real estate comes up so often when we're talking to clients, just like your conversation yesterday. And the one thing that I always say is it's what we're going to be talking a lot about today is just managing the tension between emotional well-being and financial well-being. And so much of real estate is about emotion, yet it's a financial decision. And we're taught not to make financial decisions based off emotions. So where do we go with these decisions? It's never black and white. There's never two people that, you know, have the same answer. Just like one of your clients there. Am I going to leave the house for legacy for my children? Am I going to rent it out? So there's so many options when it comes to real estate. And we really got to navigate through it well.
And of course, you have the clients that say, I want to die in my house.
Yes, aging in place.
Aging in place.
Yeah, it's a real thing. And then we need to make sure that our current home fits that. Like, are we able to age in home? Do we have wider hallways? Do we have roll-in showers? Do we have single-level homes? Will it support me as I age?
And on the emotional side of it, will it take me out of the system of people and being relationship oriented? Because a lot of times people get so secluded in their house, especially when a spouse passes. And
yes,
then we're looking at retirement communities or some other sort of an option. So where should we start? Maybe people who are just thinking about real estate and maybe purchasing a house for a first time.
Yeah. So for purchasing a home for the first time is an event that every one of us can remember. Do you remember the first house you purchased?
I surely do.
I do too. I was 22 years old and I sat there with the keys to my duplex. And I sat there in the middle of my living room and I had these keys and I'm looking around these empty walls and I'm like, what did I do? And for an entire year, I got to tell you, I was a little nervous. Like, did I bite off more than I can chew? But after I got through that first year, it was the most rewarding process. So for my first time homebuyers out there, I'm always just jump in. You know what? It's never going to feel perfect. You're never going to feel like I'm perfectly ready for this, but just jumping in and starting that process. I think the accumulation of wealth that comes with real estate is definitely going to be a really good enhancement to any other portfolio that you do. So as it relates to first time homebuyers, my first advice is just do it. You're never going to feel perfectly ready.
And so now if we look at retirement and buying another house, what are some of the things people need to think about there? Because jumping in, they've already jumped in at one point.
So
And it's different now. What we wanted when we were, like you were 22 years old, there are some different things to consider when you're thinking about retiring.
Yeah.
And, you know, I often think about where people choose to live. I myself made a big mistake, Tammy. I decided that I wanted to move to Florida, retire to Florida. And so I did buy something in Florida. And the truth of it is I'm not happy because it's everyone there is retired and I'm not retired.
Yeah.
Now, I'm old enough
it's
to
true.
Be retired,
yeah.
But it's golf and play cards. I need more stimulation. I need to be in another area, such as maybe a Tampa or somewhere else that has a little bit more going on. So that I bought a house and now I have this house that I'm trying to figure out what to do with. So I think those are some of the important decisions that people really have to think about. Are we believing that Florida, like I did, was the epitome of retirement? Or is it really what is most important to me will matter and make me happy in retirement?
So true.
I didn't think about that.
No, a lot of people don't. And so it's really hard to align our values and our goals with our housing options. So there's a couple things that I think of in these scenarios. Is number one, we need to kind of ask ourselves, how does community and connection play into our housing? I mean, we can't ignore that. And so if you're looking for community and connection, you know, maybe an active adult community or urban condos might be something to consider. If you're looking for simplicity and just low upkeep, maybe a condo or a townhouse or a senior living community is something to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're looking to travel and freedom, absolutely. Lock and leave properties like renting. We have to ask, what does our lifestyle look like? Aging in place, like we talked about. Do we have a single level home? So we really kind of need to ask ourselves these values. And sometimes we don't know them until we explore them and find, oh, I didn't realize I need more stimulation. And that's okay. We got to have lots of ability to pivot in our plans. So,
you know, Tammy, when I was purchasing this, it was an idea that I had. And I think it came from my aunt and uncle thinking that they had made it if they made it to Florida.
Sure.
It was really if they made it, if they went to Florida and had a Cadillac. I didn't need the Cadillac, but that was their idea. But one of the things that I've said to clients and I didn't follow my own advice was live where you want to play.
That's great. Yeah.
Live where you want to play. And so I didn't really think about that myself. I just was thinking about Florida and being in a community where I could golf. I do like to golf, but not 7 days a week.
Right.
And
right.
I didn't think it through.
Right. Right. And that's okay. You know what? I even had one of those clients I was talking to last week, and she had that same goal. She was like, I will make it if I can relocate to Florida. Well, she went down to Florida. Now, she wasn't happy for another reason. She needed access to healthcare. And what we don't realize in the state we live in Wisconsin, our healthcare is robust. It's accessible. We have lots of options. And she didn't find that, at least in the community that she moved to in
yes.
Florida. And so that was another thing that we don't think about when we relocate, even to rural communities. Like my dad, he moved 3 hours north to a little town in central Wisconsin. His healthcare options is a 45-minute drive.
Yeah.
And there's no family around him. So that's why it's really important to start thinking about these questions. And it's hard to give ourselves permission to go there when we're just entering retirement. Because if I ask my new retirees, what's the real estate plan? Of course it is, I want to age in place. Of course it is, maybe I want to hop to be a snowbird in Florida. Those are some common themes. But I really give yourself permission to explore, how will that look if I move to central Wisconsin? I don't have friends. How does it look if I move to Florida?
Or if you move to be by your children or grandchildren.
Right.
That's always a big draw.
Yes. Yes. And I can understand that as a mom that is a newly empty nester. My kiddos just moved out in September. And so I can understand the draw of wanting to move close to them. But will they have, you know, what are my expectations?
Yeah.
Expectations ruin relationships sometimes, right?
Yes.
And if my expectations is to spend every minute with them and they're busy, now I've made this real estate investment on an expectation that's not fulfilled. And that can be a little disappointing and would cause a pivot in our plan.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
I know that so often people think about building their dream house. And I don't know, I've had so many clients that have always dreamt of building this beautiful big dream house. All the kids are gone, right, and they have this big house, and it's that the grandchildren are going to come and they're going to stay there. And then they're disappointed. And
right,
they end up having to sell the house or downsize, that it's just too big. And I always ask my clients, well, what would happen if one of you passed away? Would you
right,
stay there? You know, sometimes people want to stay in their house as long as they possibly can. And that's not always the best avenue as well.
That's so true. And you know what? It's really important to get ahead of that decision before you have to make that decision, right? And it's really hard to time that perfectly. But you're right. We build these beautiful homes and there's a lot of maintenance involved. And we got to think about that. And so we can't not budget. We have to be careful to budget for those. And so I always have a rule of thumb. If you know me for 2 minutes, I love talking to my clients about a good rule of thumb, right? Of course, there's exceptions. But for home maintenance, we can't forget about the home maintenance of those big, beautiful homes. And
well, if you don't keep up the home maintenance, you don't keep up the value of the house.
Exactly.
Which is really a lot of times what happens with senior parents.
So true. So true. And the average rule of thumb is, for a single family home that we're living in, we should budget about 1% of the value of the home. So if it's a $500,000 home, we need to budget about $5,000 a year to care for that home and keep up with the maintenance. And so we got to think about that when we're building those big, beautiful homes. And some things can impact that, of course. A luxury home or a lake home might, you know, need a little bit more than 1%. But on average, nationwide, that's what we should be thinking about for budgeting. It's not just home insurance and taxes, but we have to budget for that maintenance. And when we get older, we can do less and less on our own. We might want to hire out some of that. So we got to be very mindful of that.
When you're talking about just having some idea, do you have a, not necessarily a list, but what would be the things that some of them that we can put in order that people should start to think about when you're sitting down and talking with a client? And I know one of the things that we ask clients, is this house part of your investment portfolio, or is this house really basically so you have a place to live, a roof over your head, and you're going to pass it to your children? And that's a really big decision, because if you're talking about someone with a $500,000 house and they plan on living in it for the rest of their lives, that isn't part of their investment portfolio.
That's right.
Because as I said earlier, you can't eat your house. But if somebody says to me, well, no, I don't need to live in here. I don't know what I want to do, but I know that I don't want to live here because the yard is too big. There's too much things that we have to do. It's a two-story. Eventually, maybe when I'm 65 or when I retire, I'm going to sell this and do something else. That means that that $500,000 could actually be part of their portfolio for
right,
spending.
Correct. Correct. So it's really, really important when we sit down, we need to identify some specific goals. And that's what's great about financial planning. If nothing else, it's just giving ourselves permission to ask questions we haven't thought about and carefully writing some thoughts around it. So we have to ask ourselves, what do we value when it comes to real estate? So number one, is it community and connection? Is it simplicity? Is it number three, I want to age in place? Is it number four, I need financial flexibility? Number five, do I need that nature and quiet, just get away from the hustle and bustle? Or last, do I need travel and freedom? It can be a combination of any one of those, but based off how you answer those six things, there is a direction we might head down. So for example, if you want to age in place, we're going to say, well, like to your point, does it have stairs? Is it a single level? Accessibility design is really important, you know? I mean, simple things like my neighbor is helping their parents age in place. And so she was swapping out the stove because having an open flame wasn't a good idea. So they needed to go to electric stove. So it's those kind of things that we just need to ask ourselves. And, you know, there's some practical questions to kind of help us kind of narrow that down and kind of figure out and narrow our goals down. And we can go into some of those questions now if you want.
You know, Tammy, just what you're talking about, your neighbor as an adult child working and helping a parent to think about what is that next step. Sometimes it really occurs when you have two adults that are aging. And sometimes that comes up as a question when one of the spouses passes away. It's like, now what? Do we stay in the house? And I've had situations where family has said, we want mom near us. And so they sell the house that they're in, they buy another house and put mom near them. And that doesn't work because they're working and mom is home all alone by themselves. Mom is home at night. And I had one client, it was such an awakening. Her and her husband passed away and she was pretty healthy. And she was looking at a retirement community and the kids really wanted her near one of the sisters. And so they bought a house and I could tell that she was really nervous. And we were meeting with her and her daughter. And I said, what's the biggest challenge you have right now? And she said, she just looked and she looked a little bit afraid to say it. And then she said, well, I'm nervous because when I get up at night to go to the bathroom, I'm afraid of falling. And when Richard was there, he would always be there and know if anything happened, and I didn't worry. So the daughter was so surprised. Here, her mother was struggling with getting up to go to the bathroom because she was alone.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things you really do have to think about in terms of a parent, in terms of yourself. What will that look like 24/7?
Right.
Because the daughter visited her every day, but it was after work or before work.
Yes, yes. That accessibility and aging in place is not an easy thing to do for those solutions are almost impossible to resolve unless there's another family member living with them.
Yes.
Right? And that isn't often how we picture aging in place either, because nobody feels that they want to have their children take care of them.
Yeah. Well, and I would go back to that question of your neighbor. She said, we're not going to use gas, we're going to electric. That's really a red flag that maybe mom needs more, because whether it's electric or it's gas, it's fire. There's a potential fire liability.
Safety issue. Yeah.
A safety issue.
Is a very big concern when you're aging in place.
Yeah. And so when we start to think about retirement, let's kind of just take a step back and let's look at someone who is just thinking about retiring from work. And so maybe they're 60, 65 years old, and they're kind of like sitting down and saying, Tammy, what are the things that we need to think about in order to have enough money and to do the things that we want to do? Are we set?
Yeah. Yeah. So then we're going to take a look and we're going to look at their whole financial plan. And if they've been prudent savers and they've had the great fortune of being able to live off their portfolio, and I never liquidate real estate to fund their retirement goals because I can't. Ultimately, I have to replace it. It's a shelter, right?
When you say liquidate it, you don't actually mean to liquidate it, but as you would and put into the portfolio as an investment.
Correct.
Is that, yeah.
Correct. So a lot of people look at it, well, I have all this equity in my home, but that's great, but it's not liquid. You can't eat your home.
Unless you want to sell it.
I can't sell it and live off the funds without replacing it. So we really got to think about that. If that is where the majority of our wealth is, that can be a little dangerous. And we have run into a couple of clients where, you know, it's great. They landed with no debt, but they have very little savings, but they have a free and clear home. So sometimes we have to go to other avenues, such as tapping into the home equity. Sometimes we've had to introduce a reverse mortgage. And those are tools that we can use in our toolbox to give some portfolio longevity, keep them in place and kind of treading water for longer, but they come with their own set of pros and cons, if you will. But those are tools we can look at.
So here would be a scenario that we could look at. A couple is retiring. They've saved. They've had kids. They put through college. Kids are gone, and they're going, yay, we're free to we're free to do the things that we want to do. I'm past 59 and a half, so I can tap into my IRA.
Yep.
So they have saved quite a bit of money in their IRAs. Let's just say they have $1 million in between the two of them. And they have Social Security and they have a little bit of cash. And they're wondering what's going to be the impact of taxes. And so one of the things that, and they have a house that's paid for, maybe has $600,000 is paid for. And they say, well, I want to stay in my house until I can't stay in the house anymore. But the only cash that they have is really in the house. They've never really saved outside of it because they put the kids through college.
Right.
They did all those other things and a house and paid off their house. So now they have a paid off house and they have a huge IRA. And guess what? A huge tax implication.
So true.
And all of a sudden, but we're saying, well, you have $1 million, but you can only take this much out because if you take out more, you're in a higher tax bracket. The more you take, the more you pay.
Right.
And so what are some of the what are the things that our listeners can do in advance of retirement so that they don't find themselves in that predicament of having all their cash and all their money in a house and all their money in an IRA, and they have to supplement their Social Security with extra dollars. And the more they take out of the IRA, the more tax they pay.
Right. Well, there's a couple different strategies they can do. But as it relates to real estate, of course, leading up to retirement, so many clients right now have these mortgage interest rates that are in the twos. So I'm going to tell you another rule of thumb, my second rule of thumb on the show so far, never, ever pay off a mortgage with an interest rate in the twos. We're going to make more most likely in the market, right? Based off of history. It makes a lot of sense. Just keep that mortgage there and plug all the money you can
into
retirement.
But I thought they'll say to you, but my mom always told my dad, pay off my house, always have a paid up house.
And that was old advice. That was when interest rates were in the 13 to 15%, that made more sense because you couldn't make 13 to 15% in the market. Now we can make, you know, we have to be really careful. Past performance doesn't equal future performance, but based off of history, we usually can make a lot more than 2.5% in the market. So that is what I say, that kind of advice, it kind of went out of fashion, let's just say. Like, you know, we don't wear the same things we wore in the 80s. That would be ridiculous.
It's like having as many bonds in your portfolio as your age.
Yes.
I mean,
yes,
I'm 76. Could you imagine 76% of my portfolio in bonds?
Old advice. That's why it's really important to take a peek at this and get new perspective, new advice. Because what our parents did, you know what? And our parents, they didn't even have a 401k. 401ks weren't even a thing until the 70s. So if we're taking the Roth IRA, well, that wasn't around until the 90s. So if we're taking advice from a generation that doesn't even have our current tools, we got to be aware that it is maybe outdated. It's time to get a refresh on that. So going back to your scenario, if they can invest in a Roth IRA, secondly, don't put more money into paying off a mortgage up that currently has a low interest rate. If you just do those two things, that's going to improve that client perspective and example you gave previously.
And I think making a goal that if you have, boy, if you get, come and sit and talk to Tammy if you got 10 years to your retirement or more, because what she can help you do is to decide how much money you want to get. So it might be that you want to save $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 before you retire so you've got that cash. Also, I would say home equity line of credit. Because at least if you know that you're going to take out, you've got so much coming in from Social Security, you know that you need X amount of dollars to live, we can tell you where your tax bracket's going to be. But if you take more out of that IRA, your tax bracket might go up. And at least if you have the home equity line of credit, you can take it out of there and maybe pay it back the following year. Because the more you take, the more you pay. And Tammy, I've been in this business now for almost 40 some years. And when I started, literally my boss would say, get as much as you can in tax deferred investments. And at that point it was annuities and it was IRAs and 401ks and different things like that, because nobody wants to pay taxes. But we never could have imagined that people could accumulate so much money in tax deferred, which is great. But do you want to give Uncle Sam 20, 25% of every dollar that you take out?
Right.
That's what you've got to start planning for when it comes to your real estate, when it starts coming to how you're going to spend your money and where are you going to take those dollars from?
Right. And to your point, for every $1,000 you take out of a IRA, if you're in that 22% tax bracket, you got to take out, you know, 1,000 plus 22%. to cover that. Where if you're borrowing $1,000 from a home equity line of credit, it's going to cost you that plus maybe 4 to 8% interest. So you're still ahead with the freedom and flexibility to pay it back. So reverse mortgages, let's talk about it since we're in this segment.
Yeah.
Reverse mortgages isn't something you plan for. That isn't something we're saying that's our goal. We definitely want a reverse mortgage. I feel reverse mortgages are great for the scenario you might have mentioned, free and clear home, but I don't have a lot in assets because I've put all my kids through school, didn't have a lot of extra, but I really valued paying off my mortgage. And now I'm here cash poor, but equity rich. So those are the good scenarios for a reverse mortgage. And the one myth that I think reverse mortgages get a bad rap is that you don't keep the title to your home. You do. You absolutely do. Reverse mortgages are underwritten by FHA, Federal Housing Administration. So it's a government entity, a sponsored entity, and it has a pretty decent interest rate. I'm not going to go in a lot because I'm not a, you know, we don't do them very often, but it is a viable option that shouldn't be dismissed too quickly because it can give you some. Basically, what a reverse mortgage does is there's no payments. It works like an annuity mm-hmm. attached to the equity of your home. And so if you have a free and clear house that's worth $100,000, maybe they can borrow to you up to $60,000. They can give you that in one lump sum, or they can send you monthly checks. During your lifetime, you don't have any payments. When you pass, your heirs have to pay off that mortgage. It's no different than if you were living on a credit card. You'd have to pay off that credit card. So I think that's the only thing I wanted to kind of take the myth out of with reverse mortgages. It's just to have an open mind. Think about it. If you land in that scenario where you are cash poor, equity rich, it might be something just to explore. The downside is it's a little the closing cost and fees. And interest. We don't love those. So that's why I'm like, we don't plan for this. But if our plan failed or we failed to plan, a reverse mortgage might be another tool to look at.
And sometimes I think that's it could be a potential option for a parent who has lived in their house their whole life.
Yeah.
And they don't have the money and they may have some health care. You need to do some different things. They want to stay in the house. It's the best option to stay in the house. There might be ways of using that equity. For our listeners today, I really want to encourage them to sit down and look at their options well before retirement to have an idea of what you want to be thinking about. So for example, if you have this wonderful paid up house and you are going to be cash poor, you might want to just start thinking about, well, do we want to sell at retirement? And mm-hmm. what would that look like?
Right. Right. And you can sell. So if it's your primary residence and the first $250,000 of capital gains is currently under current tax law is exempt from any long-term capital gains. If you're married, then that's $500,000 of capital gains that is exempt. So if you sell it and put it into your portfolio, that's a really great option.
So Tammy, one of the things that people will say to me is they want to downsize. They've got this house that's way too big for them. They way too much yard work. And they say, we've been thinking about downsizing, but we go out and we look, and I can live cheaper in the house I'm in right now than to get a new house or to rent. And does it make sense to rent because I'm giving up my equity? Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I think that there are some concerns like maintaining it. Is your health going to be affected by maintaining that? Now you've got to get people in to pay to have all those things done. Where's the trade-off?
Some of the trade-off as it relates to, it is difficult to downsize right now in the tight inventory that we have in the housing market. So a lot of our clients are sitting on bigger homes than they have need of, which means a higher maintenance bill. And in order to get into something that fits them better, they almost have to spend more. And that is a really hard mindset. That's a money value that's hard to argue with. And so it's strictly a money value that says, how can I pay more for less?
Yeah.
Right? And that's really difficult, but we really have to offset the thought of, but staying in this home means I got leaves I have to rake. I've got gutters that need to be cleaned out. And I'm going to have to hire some of that work, or I have to be dependent upon my children to do it, or I have to go up on a ladder. Not recommended. So really, we have to just say, you know, when do I give myself permission to have a certain lifestyle that's going to support me? And this house has to support me during that time. So I think just getting past that money value that, yeah, we might have to pay more for what we perceive as less, but in the end, I think it'll be more because it's going to be a better fit for our lifestyle. And again, remember at the top of the show, I said today's conversation is going to be about managing the tension between emotional well-being and financial well-being. And that is the difficult, it's a tug of war sometimes.
And I can say that I had my large home and I downsized. And the first time I downsized into a much smaller place than I was really comfortable in. Mm. And I had to get rid of a lot of different things. And it was really hard. I learned that once you take the pictures off your wall, it just becomes a house. It isn't your home anymore.
So true. So true.
So it's like once I got the pictures off my wall, but then I moved again and I really did think about what was important. And I moved downtown into the Third Ward. Mm-hmm. And I can walk everywhere. I can go to theaters. I can go to restaurants. I can go shopping. I can walk to where I get my hair cut. I have friends down there. And that was really important for me. I could not see myself any longer living in a neighborhood with a lot of kids. And not, it was just that wasn't going to feed my soul.
Right.
And I like the idea that I can walk outside and there's people walking their dogs and it's different every day. Whereas a lot of people want to be out in the country or they want something mm-hmm. different. And I think that's, you can't blame yourself if you don't get it right the first time. And right. you always, I think, have to know you can always sell.
Exactly. And sometimes
a decision doesn't have to be the permanent for the rest of your life decision.
Right. And to your point, we sometimes learn more from our mistakes than our accidental victories, right? And knowing you for even 5 minutes, I can just tell that you come alive by community and connection. So, of course, that seems like a perfect fit. A rural community, a quiet lifestyle. We know that's not Karen. And so sometimes we just got to be, and what we used to know ourselves as changes as we get older. And that's okay. Maybe, you know, maybe that rural community and that subdivision was perfect when we're raising kids. We got to give ourselves permission. Is that what I need now? Right. So that's
and how do you
key.
Get your exercise? How do you stay healthy?
You so know, true.
Getting, we're all going to get old, but we don't have to be old.
So, yeah, I like that. I like that.
How do you do that though? How do you do that? And I always tell my clients to walk like you got a place to go, you know? But if you're in maybe a situation where you don't have a place to go and you end up watching TV and you end up doing crossword puzzles and you end up doing things that might not be in your best interest, that's also part of that decision of where should I live?
Absolutely.
Health.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. Health is wealth, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so choosing your home is going to contribute a lot to your emotional well-being, which contributes to your overall health. At the end of the day, like I said, health is wealth. So this is going to be a decision that is going to contribute in so many different ways outside of the bottom line. So lifestyle is really, really important.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you're looking for a trusted partner or ready to elevate your financial plan, you're in the right place. With multiple Better Business Bureau Torch Awards for ethics and integrity, Ellen Becker combines expertise with a team member you can trust. Meet our advisors and explore financial resources at ellenbecker.com.
Tammy, what is the best way? So we've got a lot of listeners out there. They're going, ooh, she's talking right to me. She's playing my song. And how does someone get prepared to sit down and do that and to work with an advisor? Because we suggest that people do sit down and work much earlier. So many times we get people coming in, they're saying, I'm retiring in January.
Right.
And it's too late to do the planning and you're really sort of stuck with wherever you are at that moment. But what would you tell people? And you explained how you love real estate and it's a part of what you do, not all of what you do.
Right.
In terms of the planning, how could someone prepare themselves to come in and speak with an advisor like yourself?
Well, there's two mindsets I think we need to get over that I feel that it's conversations I have on a weekly basis. Number one, everybody says, once I understand a little bit more about investments, I'll go talk to somebody about investments. That rarely happens, right? That's why, I mean, the investment world is big, it's broad. And if it doesn't interest you, I mean, getting somewhat familiar is great. But if we're putting it off because you just don't feel like you know enough, that is one of the chief constraints I see behind clients who have put it off. Secondly, the chief constraint clients have said, well, I wanted to come in sooner, but I'm a little ashamed because I don't think I've done a good job at savings. You know, I had this event in life, I had that event. So those are the two things that prevent people from planning earlier. And so I would just say, if you feel that's you, if you feel like I don't know enough or I haven't done enough, I would just say, just change your mind and schedule the appointment, because you're like 99% of every client that sits down in my new client meetings. The first question I ask is, what made you set the appointment? And then they're so happy that they've got here. They're like, we've been thinking about doing this for years. I'm finally glad we made the call. So I think just identifying those two mindsets will put you behind years and years of planning. Do it now.
And sometimes it's hard for two people to get on the same page. They have a different idea of what retirement looks like. And, you know, my grandfather, when he retired, he sat on the front porch and he sat in a rocking chair and he looked forward to Saturdays to watching the Hulk, the wrestling. I mean, that was his retirement. And my other grandfather, when he retired, it was about not working and going fishing all the time. That doesn't, either one of those don't fit into me, but that's what I was brought up with. And my own father, when he retired, he was done working and he did a lot of carpentry and making things for all of us. That also doesn't fit in. So where do we get our vision for what retirement is? And Julie has said to me, and I laugh about it, she'll say, Mom, you're a failure at retirement. And I go, in the sense that most people think about retirement.
Yeah.
But for me, it's an absolute success because I'm doing things that I love. I'm involved in philanthropy. I've got friends. I'm going all the time. That's my style. Each one of us has a different idea of what retirement is. And sometimes working with a financial advisor, working with you, you help bring two people together so they each get what they're hoping for out of retirement.
Yeah, I always say nothing kills vision like two visions. So it's really important that when you sit down with that financial advisor, first off, a little bit, I mean, I don't talk, I always say, I always joke with my clients, I'm like, I don't talk in finances, all right? We're gonna talk just plain language, but we're gonna explore some questions. And I ask some hard questions. I say, go home and talk about it, because what we want to do is refine a vision that you both feel comfortable with. And maybe it's a blend of two visions, especially when, you know, in early retirement, mid-retirement, late retirement. And so it's really important to ask your spouse who you're journeying through, is this my vision? Or even if you're a single person, you know, so often the social norms of this is what retirement looks like, I must move to a golf community in Florida. Is that really your vision? So let's put some, all the noise and all of the pressures, and let's just really refine one vision and work towards it.
And I guess just to be really clear so people do understand, you look at everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the 401k, making a decision. What's the next step? So, for example, just would be when someone is retiring, often what I will say 6 months to a year before retirement is to start to move that 401k within your 401k to something a little bit safer. Because what you want to know when you retire is, I have this much money.
Right.
And if the market corrects, you don't want to be down 10 or 20%.
Right.
So before we actually do the retirement, we go to cash. And then we know exactly what we're moving over at retirement. I've had so many clients retire and the money's there and they're planning their life on having $500,000 and the market corrects, there's $300,000.
Right.
Or $400,000. And so it's looking at everything. It's looking at life insurance. It's looking at your home. It's looking at debt.
Yes.
Because cash flow is a really big thing mm-hmm. in retirement. And where are you going to take that money? Often people say, well, I'm worth $1 million or I'm worth $2 million. And then all of a sudden you look down and they've got a whole bunch of it in investments that they can't get their money out of, similar to a house. So now they're worth a lot, but they can't take the money out of annuities. They can't take the money out without paying high fees. And mm-hmm. So you look at everything.
Well, yeah, part of my job really is, I mean, we can build a beautiful portfolio together, and that's great. But if I don't insure over one bad day, well, then it wasn't really a great plan. So insuring over one bad day means looking at insurance, estate planning, budgeting, timing, making sure I have income preservation, even for years when we're going into recession, which we will. In a 30-year retirement, we're going to hit a couple of recessions. That's just the market, but we're going to plan for all that. So we plan for those one bad days ahead of time. So that's so key, is when we're sitting down together, it's not just about how can I accumulate all the wealth. It's how can I also preserve and make sure I'm navigating through that one bad day.
The other thing, the last thing that I would really like to just touch on is looking at the history, your own medical family history. So I feel very blessed in our family. We don't have anyone who has had memory issues, Alzheimer's, anything like that. We got a lot of cancer.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't have the memory issues, which can cause long-term care.
Devastating, yeah.
And so one of the things that's so important before you go out and decide, I'm going to sell my house, my husband or my wife is ill, is to sit down and do some planning. Because the reality is, and you know, I don't know if I have these numbers exactly right because they change constantly, but if one of you has a very large IRA, and a lot of spouses don't, could be a husband or a wife, they have a smaller one. If you get into the situation of trying to plan for Medicaid. You have two things. The spouse in the community gets to keep their IRA. They get to keep about $100,000+ and a car mm-hmm. and their house.
Right.
So it might make sense for you not to sell that house.
Correct.
If you're going to be doing that type of planning. Now, if you have a spouse that has that in the community is the one that is sick and has a small IRA, they can be put on Medicaid very quickly because they use that IRA. So it is, there are some things in there that are really important to think about before you just rush out and make a decision. That planning piece is so critical, particularly if you're willing, and I would say you really need to find that person that you resonate with, that you can talk about it. Because your personal planning is as important as your financial planning.
Right.
Really understanding what are the options. I mean, I have a friend right now whose both parents had dementia. And
so rough.
She's in her 60s and we're just sitting down talking about it. And she's afraid. And she says, what do I do? I don't want to be a burden on the kids. She is not married, which is a whole different, because she has to become poor to be on Medicaid, where a couple has some different options. So I would just encourage our listeners that if you're planning on retirement, if you're thinking about retirement, sit down, talk to Tammy, talk to someone that can help you sort through all of your options. And then once you have the options in place, then you can start really planning on a deeper level.
Yeah.
And it's always changeable. That's the beauty of planning.
Right. We have to be able to pivot. We have to be able to pivot. And we, even when we run some of our software projections, there's an actual part where I pause and I'm saying, what are you afraid of? And what's your biggest fear? And so, I mean, that doesn't seem very financial, but that's really important. Let's solve for that. Let's kind of test and stress the portfolio to solve for your biggest fear. And so a lot of times it will be long-term care event. So I'll put in that scenario, we'll hit a button and it'll say, you have this probability of success, even if the worst happens. I'll tell you what, those clients just leave with a sigh of relief. Like, I feel so confident in the plan. Now we know from year to year, it can change and so forth, but just having that confidence is so empowering. Just bringing things into sharper focus and saying, let's define the fear. Let's name the fear. Let's attack the fear. And then they just leave with, like I said, so much more confidence. So
So my guest today is Tammy Niemann. She's a financial advisor with the Ellen Becker Investment Group, and it's almost lunchtime. Let's go to lunch.
Let's go to the lunchroom. Sounds great.
But the reason I'm saying that is each one of the advisors in Ellen Becker have a certain expertise that we can do. So I can come and talk to you and say, Tammy, here's my client situation. What would you suggest on real estate? What would you suggest on mortgage lending? What can they expect if they're out there today? And what does that look like? And what about a home equity line of credit?
Right.
So I can just sit down with you at lunch and we can talk about something. And I think I know that is a huge, it's a huge opportunity for all of our advisors to be looking at expert advice. And we're not trying to figure out what to do. We really have good concrete evidence as to making recommendations. So
yeah, the team. It's wonderful. That way we don't live to be experts on everything, but together we're experts on most things.
Do you have one lasting thought that you'd like to share?
Yeah, invest in what you see, not what you feel. So I love giving that advice to my clients because we just got to invest in what we see. And so often we can, if we invest by what we feel, one day we're going to feel like I don't want to own a house. One day I'm going to feel like I love owning this house. Invest in what we see in the future, not what we feel.
Oh, I love that. I love that because fear will just, the hardest thing for people to be is with the fear of the unknown.
Correct.
And so the best way to get around that is to put paper to pencil and to be able to have facts to make decisions by. Tammy, thank you so much. And I just want to also thank all of you, our listeners, for tuning into Money Sense. If you'd like to share this episode with a friend or family member, just hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. At the Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe education is the first step towards confident financial decisions. And we love bringing you insights from experts to guide you on your financial journey. Have a really great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.